Radio 1040 WHO. Morning, everybody. I'm Jan Michelson. Welcome aboard. This is a Wednesday morning get-together. It's an open line time for the first few minutes this morning. I've got guests most of the morning later. We're going to talk with a bunch of people and some really interesting folks here today. We're going to talk with Congressman Steve King for a few minutes because he is going to be joining me and a bunch of other people this weekend at Point of Grace Church. That's going to be the site of the National Security Action Summit. There's going to be a bunch of folks, including Ann Corcoran. Remember her from several days ago? She participated in the Refugee Resettlement Watch Program. She's going to blow the whistle on a bunch of things. I'm going to hear from Dr. Ben Carson and also Donald Trump, Frank Gaffney, Ted Cruz, and Rick Santorum, and a bunch of folks from Iowa who are going to be evaluating national security issues. And I will be speaking just for a few minutes on the immigration and security issue and taking some questions from the audience as well. Much of what's going to happen will be Q&A. Almost everybody that is going to be asked to speak will be taking questions. So that should be a fun and interesting thing. The Family Leader is sponsoring this, and this is going to be in Iowa. It couldn't have come at a better time when national security issues are at the top of everybody's mind. Let's see, what else? In addition to Congressman Steve King, we're going to talk with Scott McEwen. You might remember him. He helped put together the American Sniper movie. He was friends with Chris Kyle, and we are going to chat about that. Plus, he has a brand new novel. And then Dana Perino. She used to be Bush's press secretary. She works for Fox News now. And she has written about her experience. She'll be chatting with us later this morning as well. So we've got a big day. But right now, it's just the two of us. If you'd like to chat, I open it up for open line phone conversation. Every once in a while, when I say open line time, I mean that. I've got all kinds of things I can bring up, and I will. But if there's something you think that we discussed or misdiscussed earlier this week, or something that's burning in your craw or something, you're welcome to join us as long as you think it's of general interest at 284-1040 or 800-469-4295. To get things started just a little bit, one of the most interesting things I've seen in a while is what happened in Cedar Rapids yesterday. Did you see this?
Syrian gun running in eastern Iowa?
First off, federal agents have charged four people in Cedar Rapids with conspiring to illegally ship a large amount of guns and ammunition to Lebanon. Steve Carlin's in the newsroom with more.
Well, Kevin, the guns and ammo were hidden among clothing and other supplies being sent to Syrian refugees in Lebanon. A criminal complaint unsealed today shows federal agents intercepted two cargo containers bound for Lebanon last week in the port of Norfolk, Virginia, containing 152 firearms and more than 15,000 rounds of ammunition. The four suspects are identified as brothers Ali and Bassem Hers, Adam Hers, who was Ali's son, and Sarah Zieter, who is Bassem's wife, all of Cedar Rapids. The complaint paints a picture of a conspiracy that came to light late last year when a suspicious Iowa gun dealer tipped off the authorities in February. Local police and national law enforcement fanned out across Cedar Rapids today, raiding several locations, including Midamar Corporation, which bills itself as a leading U.S.-based halal food brand, and Pizza Daddy, a restaurant owned by Ali and Bassem's brother, Nathan Hers.
All right, so I was working on that story. I won't continue the complete story. You get the idea. It is interesting that we have a National Security Action Summit about Islamic issues, about national security, when we find pockets
right here in our own backyard, where people are legally buying weapons, but then trying to ship them to troubled spots in the in a different part of the world, to Syrian refugees, who, just for the record, the State Department and the UN want to ship hundreds of thousands of those Syrian refugees to the United States. What could go wrong with that? So anyway, there's just some of the stuff that likely to be brought up at the National Security Action Summit this weekend. This is Herb. Good morning, Herb. What's on your mind?
Good morning, Dan. I just can't get that Michelle Obama speech at Tuskegee out of my mind.
Why?
I just can't believe the racial, not racist, but the racial connotation of anger that came out of her mouth toward it. Just this victim mentality of, you know, we're oppressed, and we always get this, and we always get that, and we always are the underdog. You would think someone would go in there and say, be the generation of black people that are going to lead this nation into the next generation.
Right.
You know, instead of, boy, we're black, and we're this, and we're that, and we get, look, I just, what a disgrace.
Well, let me just give you the other side of this for just a second. After having watched this for a while, that's the way she has always been. She and her husband got into office this way. These are still the Alinsky tactics that got her husband elected. Starts with the proposition, you and I are victims.
Right.
And since we're victims, we can't be expected to behave in the normal rules of society because we're victims. We're empowered by our victim status. And we are helpless and hopeless to do anything about us and about it until you elect us. Well, they're on
right.
their way out, and they're still serving up the rhetoric that got them there, and they haven't grown an inch. The people who have observed the Obama family have always referred to Michelle as Obama's, quote, bitter half.
Exactly.
She is a damaged person, and she cannot get beyond her her story of being downtrodden and her anger about she's in the White House, for Pete's sake. She's in
exactly.
the and she still sees herself as an oppressed minority.
The First Lady of the nation.
Yes.
That should be saying, let's bond together as people, you know.
Well,
I would like to think that the majority of people, white, Asian, black, or whoever, they're not racist. I would like to think that. Why carry that on? Why not unite the nation?
Well, she's not a racist in that sense. She's a racialist.
Racialist, yeah.
What she's doing is she's practicing the politics of race. As you say, it's totally unnecessary.
Exactly.
Americans wanted to embrace Obama and the message of hope in post-racial America. Instead, these people have made it a lot worse. And since she's been insulated in the White House for all of this time, she hasn't grown an inch. We'd love to embrace these people, but my goodness, they keep rebuffing us. I understand it, but I don't like it.
You know, Jan, I really believe that when they were headed into the White House, they could have been the first black president that just changed everything. That notion of change, they're going to go down as the worst president ever. You know, I mean, seriously, our nation's debt is worse than all other presidents combined, off of one person, off of one president.
Well, you can't blame that on the president. The president can't spend a dollar. He can't print a single dollar. He can't designate a single purchase unless an enabling Congress gives him the car keys.
There you go. There you go.
And,
so it's not just his fault.
You can't blame. Now he did not turn down the power and money that went along with TARP 1 and 2 and all the other stuff.
Right.
But you're right. He's going to get the accumulated anger because
history. Bump
yeah,
on it. Yeah.
He only will partially deserve it because the profligates in Congress allowed the printing press to be turned up full speed, and there's nothing they can do about it now because they can't turn it off. Everything falls apart. Hey, thank you, Herb. I appreciate
it. Take my call.
You bet.
I didn't expect Michelle Obama to be on anybody's mind here today. There's plenty of things to ponder. You're welcome to join us. This is Ted. Good morning, Ted.
Hi, Jan. How you doing?
I'm doing great. What's on your mind?
Well, I saw a story this morning in the news about the speed cams in Des Moines, and I saw Jason Halifax, spokesman, defending them and talking about safety.
Of course he is. It's his job. He's got to defend the money stream. There's millions of dollars at stake if they continue to get blocked by the Department of Transportation by putting up these speed cameras, these gotcha cams. They lose more than $1 million a year.
Well, absolutely. I mean, and he's lying through his teeth. I mean, he's doing the dance. You know, I know, he knows. It's about money, like you said. So my challenge to the Des Moines police would be, okay, if this is just about safety and not money, how about you donate every cent you get from those to, say, the Puppy Jake Foundation?
I propose something similar, except I wanted this to go to a fund for uninsured motorists. Because if we're going to use public money that's derived from, theoretically, people who are breaking traffic laws, it ought to go to the victims of people who break traffic laws and people who drive around without valid licenses or insurance. And that money ought to be designated to go to the victims of the so-called criminals. But legislation was introduced to do something similar, and the political class ran screaming from the room at the very idea that money should be directed towards the benefit of the taxpayers rather than the benefit of the political class.
I would buy into something like that. What really amazes me is how somebody can sit in front of a TV camera and lie through their teeth and go home with their head held high. I mean, that's just ridiculous. That just bothers me.
Well, unless you've convinced yourself that you are, the voice of reason there, and the other guy is the true liar in the room. But I think it is remarkable, though, that the head of the DOT, who is part of the political class, Mr. Trambino, is probably one of the most honest members of the political class I have come across in a long, long time. To think about, from his point of view, as a member of the beneficiary class of our money, he actually said, to say we can't safely manage interstate speed limits without, I'll use the word gotcha cams, isn't, he says, not only incorrect, but limits our ability to solve problems as we strive to serve Iowans. He blew the whistle on the scam. He says it's not safety. This is all about the money. And he has my permanent admiration for being an honest honest public official that bit the hand that feeds him. I think that's really cool. He's
awesome,
a statesman.
Too.
He ought to be thought of as a candidate for higher office with that level of integrity.
Well, but that would require honesty, which he has in higher office. I don't think those two things are mixed, do they?
I do. I think you can aspire and be in higher office. We see a lot of really good people who are aspirational, and a number of them get to Washington and try to do what they promise. We'll be talking with one later this morning, the new congressman. I'm sorry, I can't remember the most recent freshman congressman. I'll think of it in a moment. But he went to Washington promising to dismantle a lot of the cushy stuff. Some of the very first things he introduced tried to do exactly that thing. I admire politicians who do what they say, or at least try to do what they say.
Yep.
And we got a bunch of them.
And actually, Steve King, who you're going to talk to later, he's from my hometown of Kyron.
Okay.
So just a little bit of information there. Well, thank you, Jan. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you. Appreciate it. Yours. I need to take a short time. When I say open line time, I mean exactly that. You introduce what you want. We'll chase it around a little bit. Later, as I said, we're going to talk with Congressman Steve King. We're going to talk with Scott McKeown. We're also going to talk with Dana Perino. It's going to be a full morning of conversation. You can be part of it on News Radio 1040 WHO.
News Radio 1040 WHO.
I'm Scott Michelson, your Iowa Gold Connection. You remember last week the warning about how illiquid global markets will cause another crash? Well, we got one. In the last couple days, the entire global bond market has fallen apart. Over $400 billion gone in just a couple days. Illiquidity is like taking a road trip in a car without any oil in the engine. You're going to get a few miles, sure, but at some point your engine is going to seize up. That's how it works. These are warnings upon more warnings, folks. Global tremors. So if there is an earthquake coming, you do not want your money in it. Precious metals are soaring right now. Silver's up almost 4% this morning. Because gold and silver is where the smart money goes when the paper markets fall apart. Now would be a good time to look at around at all your options. Give me a call at 1-800-819-7160 or visit iowagoldconnection.com and request your free information. That's 1-800-819-7160 or visit iowagoldconnection.com.
E-L-A-Y. Play.
Good luck from News Radio 1040 WHO.
Everybody's making a big whoop over Jeb Bush's decision to skip the Iowa straw poll. Who cares if he skips the Iowa straw poll? The straw poll is for candidates. So far, Jeb Bush isn't a candidate. I mean, isn't that pretty obvious? And secondly, well, we got to wonder if this is a contrived event. It's just a fundraiser for the Iowa Republican Party. It's outlived its usefulness. See, that's what losers do. That's called the political loser's limp. Really, he's being advised by the Rhino Republican faction to avoid Iowa because when he comes out here, fairly conservative Iowans will be asking him troublesome questions. He's doing a Hillary. Hillary doesn't like answering any questions. But in her case, it's slightly different. Hers is sort of the, like it says in the book of Proverbs, the wicked person flees when nobody is chasing them. In Jeb Bush's case, he has taken positions that are unpopular to the base of the Iowa Republican Party, and rather answer questions and be logical about it and mix it up. He said, in his handler said, well, you know, that Iowa straw poll is an outmoded, antiquated piece of business. And, you know, it's not representative. Hey, they've changed it. Now it's a freebie. You don't have to pay to play. And all you have to do is show up and answer questions and try to win the case with the Iowans. Is he up for that? No, he's going to have to wash his socks that weekend. It's not a damaging blow to the Iowa straw poll. It's a damaging problem for Jeb Bush. Now, not being competitive or playing here in Iowa probably doesn't hurt his presidential aspirations. First in the nation doesn't mean last in the nation. We just get one little vote. And he can dump his bajillions of dollars in other parts of the country and not be damaged at all by his no-show here in Iowa. Does that make Iowa less relevant? Not really, because most of the political class knows how the game is played. Rhinos don't do well here, so they don't play here. Right? I mean, if my assessment is wrong, I'll be happy to listen. But now the straw poll is just a really great way for candidates, especially since they don't have to buy nothing, to come and make their case known. Jeb won't do that. And the same people that advised Romney are working for Bush. So the Romney people have latched on to another a mainstream moderate Republican, limousine Republican, same people. So they're doing the same thing for the same reasons. So, Jeb, sorry you didn't have what it took to at least come and talk to Iowans. Going on one Fox News program does not constitute running for office, by the way. This is Dennis. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning, Jan. Hi. I was at the VA this morning for a lab work, And I've been going there for 7 years now since I moved back to Iowa.
Right.
The lady at the lab, I swiped my card like I normally have all the times. I just go in for just lab work. I went over to wait on the travel section. Didn't open until 8:30, so I had to wait for 40 minutes. No problem. I get up to the counter, and the lady says, well, you have to go back and sign in. I said, ma'am, I did sign in. I swiped my card. No, you have to go back and check in. I went back all the way across, and the lady over there at the blue team said, there's no requirement you check in. You're only here for a lab. That lady knows about this. Well, my question is, how many other veterans are getting treated by this way? I went and lodged a formal complaint with the advocacy person.
Right.
She says that I just can't talk to that lady. And so how many other veterans are being messed
over? Why can't you talk to that lady?
Well, evidently the lady has maybe the color of her hair has an effect on her. I don't know.
She has issues, eh? Nobody wants to deal with this lady.
Yeah.
Maybe she should not be working with the public.
That's the question, because the lady at the back at the other area, when I went back over there, said she used to work in this area. She knows what the rules are.
That's known as being Iowa passive aggressive in a malicious way for no reason. That is a bureaucrat, it sounds like, the way you're describing it. If it's accurate, you've just encountered somebody whose bureaucracy has gone to her brain. And it is the bureaucracy equivalent of getting in the left-hand lane and slowing everybody down. That's passive-aggressive, hostile behavior on the part of somebody who, in every other area of her life, she is powerless, so she's making your life miserable. Well, I don't know how to handle that. It sounds like you've already taken it to the next level to talk with her supervisor, who sounds like she's afraid of her and doesn't want to deal with it. So maybe you should take it to the next level over the next level.
Well, that's what I'm considering. But I wanted to make reason I called you is if there's other veterans out there getting treated the same way, they need to lodge a complaint. And I'm gonna take this for hire. Yes, I am. But I'm just trying to encourage other veterans. If they have somebody treat them wrong, they need to say something about it.
Agreed. Anybody who is being mistreated should step up and make themselves heard. That's what competent humans do. Thank you, Dennis. This is Mike. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Hi.
I called for one thing, and you keep trolling more bait under my nose.
Oh, that's okay. That's all right.
but the one thing I wanted to bring up was the pizza place in Cedar Rapids.
Yes, the front for the gun runners.
And that's what really worries me about this NSA surveillance of phone records and things like that. Because me being I'm not a foil hat wearing wacko, you know, but a red-blooded American just gets hungry and calls in for pizza.
Right.
And then your phone number is linked with this organization, and you was just hungry.
Yeah, you just wanted some pepperoni.
and now I'm on a, you know, now my phone link is linked to his, and yours is linked to mine because I called you.
Well, that's an interesting concern. There might be a distant reason to be concerned about that. But it's illustrative, though. In this case, the NSA had nothing to do with the bust. No security agency had any clue what was going on until an honest gun dealer, and there obviously is such a thing, an honest gun dealer notified the authorities about transactions he considered suspicious. So it wasn't
the flag on the field.
So the our much vaunted and feared NSA and intelligence gathering service was not even monitoring these front organizations where they should have been, and it was only the honesty of a gun dealer that brought this to the attention of the intelligence community. And not being critical of the gun dealer, I'm saying he did the world a favor. And the interesting thing is it wasn't the intelligence community that was paying attention to these front groups. They should be. And I should also add, in many cases, one level of government will be aware of these nefarious activities, or at least the suspicion of them, yet don't transmit that information to the next gen or the next level. And even though they know that something is suspicious, they don't act upon it. Oh, I got a break here for our farm market, so we'll return more with some open line time on News Radio 1040 WH. Later, we're going to talk with Congressman King. We're also going to talk with Scott McKeown. He's the writer behind the American Sniper story and the movie about Chris Kyle. And later, we're going to talk with Dana Perino. She's a Fox commentator at the moment. Used to be George W. Bush's press secretary. Right now, it is Todd. Good morning, Todd.
Hey, Dan.
Hi.
You were talking a minute ago, the guy was talking about the businesses or whatever. You know, up here, you're aware that the city council is trying to pass an ordinance where the, like, secondhand shops, like a coin shop or
right.
these new antique places,
right.
they will be required, if they buy anything from anybody, they will be required to get a litany of information from these people that come in and do businesses with them.
Why?
That's for... Well, I don't know. The city council thinks that they're entitled to put that sort of an ordinance in, and they're basically what they're doing is they're treating these people like they're pawn shops, and they're not. It's ridiculous.
In what way are they not?
In what way are they not? What
a pawn shop? Yes.
Well, if you walked in and were selling small gold bullions or something like that to somebody, are you considered a pawn shop?
So you go into the store and buy, as an individual goes in there and buys stuff that's secondhand. Does the store go in and sell to those stores too?
Yes.
Well, how is it any different than a consignment store?
Well, but do you think you should have to write down all your personal information if you go in and sell something?
Absolutely not.
Okay,
now if there's a question of whether or not people are using these secondhand stores to fence stolen property, I think that is maybe what's in the minds of the politicians there.
Exactly, but here's the thing. Just like the guys, just like you just mentioned, give the store owners a little bit of credit. The guy that was the gun dealer, he was suspicious of what was going on, and what did he do? He contacted the authority.
Right.
You don't think that those people are already going to do that?
I don't know. I mean, it varies with the character of the individual. Just like you don't expect the garden variety pizza store to be shipping arms to the Syrians.
By the same token, yeah. here's another spot where, you know, let's say I had an antique or something like that, and I wanted to take it in and sell it. I got to fill out all my personal information for the. For the City Council of Ames, Iowa?
I think it's ridiculous, but it's also a sort of a test of what, to the degree our culture has come apart at the seams, where every business deal is now suspicious, and that every person in the business chain must demonstrate their innocence to some bureaucrat. It's offensive to our history. However, given the nature of our culture and the somewhat of a sewer it's become, what alternatives are we going to have?
You know, it's funny. You asked me if I was going to do that. That would be just like a pawn shop or whatever,
or a fencing operation.
Yeah. Well, okay. What if I go in and I want to deposit $1,000 at the bank, and am I going to have to fill out a bunch of paperwork for that now?
No, they won't.
That's a fencing operation, or that's a pawn shop type deal.
Well,
if that's the definition you're putting on it.
It's not so much the banks are responsible. They love every contribution that people are inclined to make. It's because the banks have a positive incentive to accept other people's money. Now, when you go to withdraw it,
That's when the feds want to know if you're going to take more than $10,000 out. Then they're going to consider that a suspicious activity. The bank is obligated to tell the feds about that, and you could be asked to explain what you need the money for, how you got it, and if you don't have an instant response, you might forfeit your money. That's how aggressive this has become. Now, the banks aren't going to care where you got the money, unless they have a hit on maybe a mark that has been marked by law enforcement, or it smells suspiciously like a cocaine stash, and their drug sniffing dogs have just found you.
Yeah.
But I've also been given to understand almost any old currency will now have the stench of drugs on it. It's impossible to keep it out. There's so much of it. But you're right, though. They're only considering it. What has been the response of the public so far?
Well, there's letters of the editor up here. Obviously, the business people are like, you know, you're killing our business because people aren't going to want to do business with it.
Why?
I mean, if it come in every time, let's say some lady wants to come in and sell her antique dining room table, and she's got to fill out a form of everything that she's got to do at some antique shop, and she's got to fill out a form with all of her pertinent information, you know. Are we to that point?
Well, we might be. I wouldn't think you would be in Ames. But they're part. But I would.
But
keep in mind where you are. You are in the
council in action.
Well, keep in mind you're in the nanny nanny headquarters of Iowa.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got a university town that's left of center to begin with. You've got do-gooders that seek public employment as a political class, and anything they can do. I mean, this is what legislators do. This is how they measure their worth, if they can get a bill passed or a law passed. And the rest of us, if we think they're full of moose roots, we should tell them to go play in the highway.
You're aware of that, what was going on.
Well, I appreciate you bringing it to our attention. Thanks a lot, Todd. I appreciate it. On News Radio 1040 WHO Radio, your turn. We have just a little bit more of our open line time. Then we'll start chatting with people right here in the radio.
Switch to U.S. Cellular and we'll pay off your contract up to $350 per line. Plus, for a limited time only, trade in for the Samsung Galaxy S6 and get $50 on top of your old smartphone's value. Requires retail installment contract, shared connect plan, $25 activation fee, and device protection plus. $50 U.S. Cellular promotional card issued by MetaBank member FDIC. Valid for purchase in-store or online. Other restrictions apply. See store for details.
Customize your shared data plan up to 75 gigs and enjoy the freedom to change your plan as needed at Cellular Advantage, your local U.S. Cellular authorized agent for over 20 years. Go to CellAdvantage.com for the location nearest you.
I told you about our great trip down to Sheraton, Iowa last weekend. We had a wonderful little ride, met all kinds of great people. The head of the Chamber of Commerce down there, Dave Hendricks, actually he runs Connecticut Yankee Peddler, but he is so proud of his town, he just couldn't wait to show us around. And you show us around the stock at his shop, which is Connecticut Yankee Peddler. Most of their stock is three-wheel bikes, trikes, to be honest, accurate. They are the experts, and people come from all over the Midwest now to Connecticut Yankee Peddler, either in person or online, because they have so many different brands from all over. And if this appeals to you, and it should, because the tricycles are a whole lot more comfortable, closer to the ground, no balance issues, no helmets to wear if you don't have to, you don't really need to. But Connecticut Yankee Peddler has been in business for a long time, and just go see them or talk to them. Connecticut Yankee Peddler is CYPBikes.com from Sheraton, Iowa.
We stand for people, progress and pride.
Are you trying to develop a new business or expand an existing one? Do you need help creating an effective business plan or finding appropriate funding? Developing a successful business can be a challenge. Iowa Farm Bureau's Renew Rural Iowa seminar helps simplify the process for rural entrepreneurs by putting all the information and people you need to know in one place at one time. Through Renew Rural Iowa, you'll gain access to relevant business tools, mentoring, and funding possibilities that can help you grow and expand your business. To learn more or to find an upcoming seminar, call 1-800-254-9670. That's 1-800-254-9670. Or visit us online at RenewRuralIowa.com.
With the seasons changing, it might be time to change your vehicle's tires. If it is, Hankook has your tire needs taken care of with its Great Catch Rebate Promotion. Get up to an $80 rebate on some of Hankook's best-selling ultra-high-performance, all-season, touring all-season, and light truck tires. No matter what you're driving, Hankook has the right tire for you. Hewitt Service Center on South Monroe Street in Monroe is where to go to get the best service at the best price. For excellent craftsmanship and peace of mind, come down to Hewitt Service Center. Be one with it. Hankook Tires.
What can being listed with YP do for your business? You're about to find out for free. YP will give your business a free listing on two extremely powerful customer delivering tools, the YP website and the YP app. Growing your business requires maximum visibility, and every month over 70 million potential new customers use the YP tools to search for businesses. 70 million! But if you're not there, they can't find you. Get the maximum visibility that comes from a free listing with America's largest marketing agency for small business, YP. Look, you're the expert in your business, and YP is the expert in driving new customers to your business. Imagine what that free listing on YP could do for your bottom line. Claim your free business listing today. Potential customers are searching for businesses like yours each and every day. Don't let your competitors get them because you're not listed. Go to myfreeyp.com. That's myfreeyp.com. MyFreeYP.com.
This is Scott Vinson, and I have served two tours in the country of Afghanistan as an airborne infantryman. Now, I'm an independent sales associate affiliated with the Coldwell Banker brand. I've joined the iHeartRadio movement to support our country's veterans in building profitable and growth-oriented civilian careers. Coldwell Banker Real Estate recognizes and values what veterans have to offer. If you are interested in exploring your own next steps, then go to iHeartRadio.com/showyourstripes or ColdwellBanker.com to learn more.
iHeartRadio.com/showyourstripes. Hire smart, hire vets.
Apparently, my knowledge of banking regulations is a little bit behind the times. Bob, what's the real number?
Hello.
Hi, Bob. What's the real number?
They already have all your information if you're depositing.
Right.
Anything over $2,900 automatically is reported to the IRS.
Really?
And then it's up to their discretion to question you where you got it.
$2,900 deposit. So the banks are obliged to deal with deposits as well as withdrawals.
It's automatic.
So I was talking with a fellow a few months ago, said, hey, I went out to buy a car, and I they went to pay for it, and I wanted to pay for it in cash, and then all of a sudden I got a bunch of questions from from them. Where did it come from? And they had to report the money. How is it possible somebody's walking around that much cash? What kind of an honest person would pay for a car with cash?
How about this?
Yes.
Years ago, we went to go on a vacation, and I took about $5,500 out and bought traveler's checks.
Right.
We only wound up using about $500-$700. When I went back to deposit the $5,000 cash, I was called in to the IRS, and they wanted to know where I got it. And I showed them the withdrawal on that. Didn't matter. They still thought it was awfully. And when I was explaining to the young auditor, young lady, couldn't have been more than 23, about deposits to Dean Witter Rentals.
Right.
She wanted to know why I was renting all this winter stuff. And I said, no. Finally, her assistant sat there and said, no, Debbie, it's a financial institution. And it was like, Rosanna, Rosanna, Dana. Oh, never mind. These are the people that have your life in their
hands. They're right? In charge of stuff.
Right. So,
all right.
Good luck, folks.
Thanks a lot, Bob. Right. I appreciate it. I guess the rhetorical question I should ask at this point is, wouldn't it be nice to live in a free country again? Everybody has the right to stick their nose in your business, and they do so because, oh, well, they're protecting us.
Against what? Well, because drug dealers and criminals are the ones that deal with cash. So if you're dealing with cash, you must be a criminal. I'm wondering if anybody else had that same experience, tried to pay for a big purchase with cash, only to be thought less of you. I don't have time to discuss that. I'm going to have to move on. We're going to talk with Scott McEwen here shortly. Then we're going to talk with Congressman King. And then we're going to talk with Dana Perino. Thanks for listening, everybody. Back after news right here on News Radio 1040 WHO.
An American Story with award-winning journalist and author Tom Brokaw.
So where do popular sayings come from? Two current expressions. Throw him under the bus, and this isn't her first rodeo, when someone may be talking about an opera diva. How did the rodeo and opera hook up? Punching below or above his or her weight. That's stolen from boxing, of course. But a stockbroker who has a good quarter, punching above his weight, the only punch he makes is hitting the buy button on his electronic trader. Stupid has come into play for something that is just too good to be true. So if you don't like what I just had to say, don't call it stupid. Just throw me under the bus. I'm Tom Brokaw. This is an American Story.
For all you farmers who are pressed for time and watching the weather, we know the weight your planting decisions carry. But you see each seed's potential. And at Key Cooperative, we want to say thanks. Thank you for feeding the world.
Did you know there are over 8,000 different ways to claim Social Security? And choosing the wrong one could cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars in retirement. We'll help you work through these strategies and help show you how to maximize your benefits this Saturday on the Mutual Fund Show at 11 a.m.
News Radio 1040 WHO.
Hi, everybody. Van Abana here. You know, for years, you've heard us tell about the great work that LeafGuard Exteriors does with their LeafGuard gutters. Well, now there's more. There's also a terrific roofing story to tell, too. Joe Smith is here. Joe?
Hey, Van. Hey, Bonnie. We are excited that spring is here. The spring rains are here. Seeds are starting to fall, and, you know, you look at your roof. We're here to come out and give you a free estimate. We're here to let you know that we're a local master elite GAF roofer, which is the top 1% in the roofing industry. We are a local roofing contractor here. We're not going anywhere. We're excited. We firmly planted roots here in the central Iowa area. A lot of times after those storms come in, there's people knocking on your door the next day.
You just came back from Arizona with a big award.
We did. We are excited to let everyone know that we are the only contractor from GAF in the state of Iowa to win the presidential award. Free estimate.
And right now you can get 75% off labor installation. So call today, 515-599-1675 or guttersiowa.com.
Why treat your soybeans with Stratego Yield Fungicide? To treat yourself to a bump in yields. With its dual modes of action and unique movement around the plant, Stratego Yield provides outstanding control of the major foliar fungal diseases, including Septoria brown spot and frog eye leaf spot. So give your beans a healthy advantage with Stratego Yield, official fungicide of the Yield Bump from Bayer. Always read and follow label instructions.
WHO Radio is available everywhere you want to listen on our free iHeartRadio app. Download it now.
WHO Des Moines.
And now, from the WHO Radio news staff and our sources from all over the world, First Things First News.
59 degrees, sunny skies over Des Moines. Good morning. I'm Heather Jordan. WHO News Time is 10 o'clock. During his opening remarks this morning, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell expressed his sympathies to the families who lost loved ones on the Amtrak train that derailed last night in Philadelphia.
Many of us awoke to terrible news this morning. We're still awaiting more information about what happened outside of Philadelphia, but we know this tragedy will touch the lives of many. Senate sends its condolence to the victims, those who were injured, and their families and loved ones. We also reaffirm our gratitude to the nation's first responders.
At least six people have been confirmed dead so far, with dozens more being treated at area hospitals. The train was carrying 238 passengers and five crew members as it headed from Washington to New York City along the nation's busiest rail corridor. The spot of last night's derailment is no stranger to tragedy. Back on September 6th of 1943, a train with more than 500 passengers jumped the tracks, killing 79 people and injuring more than 100. The Iowa Department of Transportation is denying appeals by four Iowa cities to continue operating their traffic enforcement cameras. Appeals by Des Moines, Cedar Rapids, Council Bluffs, and Muscatine were rejected yesterday. The head of the agency says the cameras do not make the interstate highways or nearby intersections safer. The cities have 30 days to file a challenge to the ruling in district court. This week is Police Week around the nation. In the Des Moines Metro, several departments are hosting events created to connect the community with those who protect it.
There's things going on throughout this past week, both in Urbandale and in West Des Moines. Saturday being the final day of Police Week is when the Des Moines Police Department holds their events. It's part of a national campaign, a national push to engage the public, to be more open to the public, to have more public awareness of what we are and what we do, and for us to meet and greet more of citizens we serve.
This Saturday, the Des Moines Police Force will be hosting an open house along with the first annual Run with the Cops 5K. It'll be in downtown Des Moines. Senator Chuck Grassley will be holding five town meetings in southeast Iowa later this month. The senator says during the week of May 25th, he will visit Tipton, West Burlington, Fort Madison, Keosauqua, and Mount Pleasant. Grassley has held a meeting in each of Iowa's 99 counties at least once every year since he was first elected to the U.S. Senate. WHO Radio News Time is 10:02. An annual report on wasteful government spending is out. With more on this, here is Fox News Radio's Rachel Sutherland from Washington.
Citizens Against Government Waste says there's plenty of pork barrel spending in the 2015 pig book, including $120 million to upgrade the Army's hulking 70-ton Abrams tank, which the Army doesn't even want anymore. Also, $6 million was spent on the East-West Center in Hawaii, built to promote better relations with Pacific and Asian nations, when it already receives funding from private foundations and institutions. Also in the pig book, $15 million to save the salmon through the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund. In Washington, Rachel Sutherland, Fox News Radio.
The list of the best high schools in America includes over 100 right here in Iowa. The U.S. News and World Report released its findings this week. Nearly 30,000 schools were reviewed by the magazine. John F. Kennedy High School in Cedar Rapids was number one on Iowa's list and number 638 on the nationwide list. The top five for Iowa include Mid Prairie High in Wellman, West Senior High in Iowa City, Decorah High, and George Washington High School in Cedar Rapids. In another list, Des Moines is leading the nation, this time in hometown pride. The capital topped a list of 100 biggest U.S. cities. Gallup says in 2014, 76% of people living in Des Moines said they were proud of where they live. Kansas City came in at number 30. At the bottom of the list, Scranton, Pennsylvania. WHO News Time is 10:04.
Wow, it's time to start talking about air conditioning already?
We're getting into that time of the year when the temperatures can swing pretty wildly, and it's definitely time to start thinking about having your air conditioner ready to go.
Our friends at Green Suppliance Heating and Cooling have an early bird special on their air conditioning tune-up for Van and Bonnie listeners. And for a limited time, Green's is offering their full comprehensive tune-up for only $69.
You know, when your service technician tunes up your AC, they are checking it to make sure it performs up to the manufacturer's specifications. And if the outdoor temperature isn't warm enough, your AC Freon charge cannot be properly tested according to those specifications. Remember, the early bird special, just $69. Call 515-323-0680. That's 323-0680. Tell them Van and Bonnie sent you.
Today we're talking with Asgrow DeKalb technical agronomist Steve Eichenberger, who covers Iowa. Steve, how can farmers better protect corn and soybean plants and increase yield performance with Poncho Votivo?
Poncho Votivo seed treatments increase yield performance of corn and soybeans by protecting young plants during critically early development stages. Applied directly to the seed, Poncho Votivo protects the whole plant above and below ground, preventing damage to early season seedlings and root before pests can strike. Preventing damage with Poncho Votivo seed treatment can lead to healthier plant establishment, improve performance, increase yield potential, and improve protection against a variety of nematode and insects. Punchable TiVo seed treatment also complements seed traits by preventing nematode and other above and below ground pest damage from reducing yield potential.
That's Asgrow DeKalb technical agronomist Steve Eichenberger. Thanks, Steve. For more information, visit agseedselect.com or work with your local Asgrow DeKalb certified dealer.
This report is sponsored by Subway.
Today, skies will be sunny and winds breezy from the south-southeast at 10 to 20 miles per hour. Temperatures will reach 72 degrees for a high. Tonight, clouds increase with rain possible after midnight, a low of 53 degrees. Thursday, day two, rain likely with a high of 65. And Friday, day three, partly sunny and 78 degrees with a chance of late-day showers. That's the latest news radio 1040 WHO three-day weather forecast. I'm Channel 13 meteorologist Megan Selwa.
Stop into Subway and fall in love with the new guacamole, perfectly made with ripe Hass avocados with just a hint of jalapeno. Come in today and see how guacamole turns up the flavor to all of your favorite sandwiches. Subway, eat fresh.
News Radio 1040, WHO.
Lots of sunny skies around the state this hour. Temperature-wise, it is 52 right now in Dubuque. Carroll is at 60. It's 58 right now in Ottumwa. Here in Des Moines, 59 degrees with lots of sunshine. I'm Heather Jordan. Get information on demand anytime at WHOradio.com. From News Radio 1040, WHO.
News Radio 1040, WHO.
WHO.
From the Hy-V studios, News Radio 1040 WHO. Views expressed are those of hosts, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of News Radio 1040 WHO.
Welcome back to the conversation. Later, Congressman Steve King is going to join us. He's going to be at the security conference over the weekend, joined by several presidential candidates and some pretty heavy hitters on the American security issue. I'm going to have a chance to speak for a few minutes. I've been asked to talk about immigration and security. But mine is just a bit apart here. You have some serious heavy hitters coming in. We'll tell you about that later. We're also going to talk with Dana Perino. She's one of the talking heads at the Fox News Network, and she was the president's press secretary. Right now, though, Scott McEwen is on our newsmaker line, and he is a novelist, and he's turned his expertise on the issue of sniping and in the expertise of sniping into a book writing career. It looks like you really got bit bad, didn't you, Scott?
Well, you know, when you hear a story as strong as Chris's, an American Sniper, it leads you to other stories and other opportunities. So I like to think that you know, the message that I put in each one of these books has something that supports this country and supports those that fight for this country. That's really what I'm looking to
do. Most recent book is called The Sniper and the Wolf. Here is a little bit of sound, by the way, from the trailer of American Sniper.
Let me ask you a question, Chris. Would you be surprised if I told you that the Navy has credited you with over 160 kills? Do you ever think that you might have seen things or done some things over there that you wish you hadn't?
Oh, that's not me, no.
What's not you?
I don't tell you enough. I'm so proud of you. You're such a great father.
I'm willing to meet my creator and answer for every shot that I took.
So what, are you in Germany or where?
I'm stateside.
You're home? What are you doing?
I guess I just needed a minute.
Scott McEwen, as I was telling you before we got started, I had a chance to re-watch the movie, The American Sniper. That is a masterpiece of movie, and there's no way you can watch that without having an amazing appreciation for the courage that went into that door-to-door cleaning out of that Iraqi town. I think that was Fallujah, or was that Baghdad that they were using for the background for that movie?
opening scene was set in Fallujah, but later Ramadi, and you know, there were scenes from Baghdad depicted as well.
Well, since you had a lot to do with the making of it and this story of Chris Kyle making it known to us, I'm wondering what you think now that you see that ISIS now controls some of those hard-won chunks of real estate.
Well, you know, it's disappointing. I mean, you know, it's very disappointing, and I think that this administration's decision to leave no troops behind, and you know, and to not get a status of forces agreement in place, and basically to abandon, you know, Iraq completely, was ill-advised. And I think that those who knew the region and know the people in the region understood that there was a vacuum that was going to be created, and that vacuum was going to be filled by evil. And you know, the forces of the bad guys are much more organized generally in a smaller fashion than sometimes the good guys are waiting, that they have to try and run the day-to-day operations in the country. And that's exactly what we saw there.
Yeah.
You know, a vacuum was opened up, and it was filled by ISIS coming out of northern Syria and other parts of the region.
And a dedicated, well-motivated group, a small one, can tie a huge one like the American military or the political structure in knots pretty easily, can't it?
Sure can, and you see that there. I mean, you know, in a day-to-day battle, I think the United States is very, you know, and rightfully so, concerned about this group. But in an upfront battle between forces, you know, even seriously outnumbered forces, if you were to put, for example, the Navy SEALs up against an ISIS force, of a multiple force greater than them, they would destroy them every time. Because these guys are just a bunch of throat cutters. They're terrorists and they're punks that are out there to extort, kill women and children, and intimidate, and they have no rules of engagement, and they're willing to do whatever it takes to get themselves in the press and, you know, advertise their cause by trying to be the bad boy on the street. But at the end of the day, they're nothing more than a gang, you know, member, you know, that is in an international basis. And unfortunately, we see this more and more in today's world.
You could have described the Nazi Party at one time that way in Germany, couldn't you?
So, exactly. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, and as it's seen, you know, momentum, because they're not checked, it becomes more dangerous than their ability to export their brand of terrorism to countries such as ours that believe in civil liberties and believe in, you know, in individual rights. And, you know, I just hope people wake up. And one of the reasons I write books such as The Sniper and the Wolf is you better wake up, because they are not willing to quit until they either die or achieve their objectives, and they don't have any rules. There are no rules in their in their resume.
Can I ask you about your novel here for a second?
Sure.
Because I haven't had a chance to read much of it yet. I'm just getting started. But there was one of the blurbs about it that described it. Scott McKeown is willing to go there, and that most people are not. What did you mean? What did they mean by that? And without destroying the plot or being a plot killer, what does that refer to?
You know, that refers, and actually, that was a blurb written by a friend of mine that is a Navy SEAL, Brandon Webb, who is a good writer in his own right. And Brandon was saying, you know, there's scenes out there and there's things out there that we're willing to talk about and willing to describe in the book that a lot of people maybe aren't willing to describe. And, you know, there's certain barbaric acts and certain things that are very, very distasteful to the average person, you know, take place every day. And we see glimpses of those when they show these people having their heads cut off or burned to death on TV. But this is what goes on, and this is the enemy that we're fighting, and you better understand that. And that's really what Brandon was talking about when he said, you know, that we're willing to go to places and discuss subjects that many people aren't. You know, our last book was about the release of prisoners from Gitmo that come back to attack the United States with a nuclear weapon.
Right.
And what do we got? The Gitmo 5 are now confirmed to be going back in and confirmed to be, you know, seeking weapons. And, you know, the day that Iran is allowed to have a nuclear weapon, you can bet your bottom dollar Hezbollah
will be in the line to take one and deliver to this country.
We just found out here, you would have no way of knowing this here, Scott, but the headlines in the paper here in Iowa this morning, you have gun charges filed against four Iowans. Turns out that they are a Muslim Iowans who are citizens for the most part. And they're running front businesses here in Iowa, and they're using those front businesses to buy weapons and ship them to Syrians who are in refugee camps. So this is, they've been just trying to be in the gun smuggling business. And if it wasn't for an alert, gun shop owner who alerted authorities, they would have gotten away with sending thousands of rounds of ammo and a couple hundred guns, including semi-automatic weapons, to a part of the world that doesn't need any more of that.
Yeah. Well, you know, you see movements and you see things such as what we just experienced down in Texas, you know, where these things pop their ugly heads up. But, you know, it's part of a larger group that, you know, that I believe has designs on, you know, attacking this country. And I you know, we see glimpses of it in Boston and in Garland and places like that. But, you know, they're amalgamating their resources and they have a single goal. And that is to see the West, you know, Europe and the United States and anyone who allies with anything different than their culture. Destroyed.
And to the point where
I think that's a fact.
To the point where you got two things, two observations. One, you have our own head of the FBI saying ISIS is here. It's not a question of if; it's a question of when they do something nasty. So, with that in mind, my first instinct when I heard about that Amtrak wreck last night was to instantly think of mischief on the part of terrorist organizations. So far, there's no evidence of that whatsoever. But I guess I'll bet your brain works the same way.
Yeah, well, you know, any time these things happen, you have to be concerned that it is related to some type of, you know, a nefarious act by these groups, and there's no doubt about it. I think that there's more going on than people want to believe, and particularly that this administration wants to advertise. And, you know, the opening scene, by chance, in The Sniper and the Wolf, the book,
yes,
is in Paris. And we know that the movement of the Islamic, you know, radical Islamic movement is very strong in Paris. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to open it up there is because
right.
it really represents Charlie Hebdo, was just an example of what these people are willing to do.
Can I ask a technical question about the movie and Chris Kyle's life? It has to do with one of the last scenes when he finally takes out his counterpart, the foil, Mustafa, who is the insurgent sniper over there that had been plaguing Americans and military people, been shooting them with a high degree of effectiveness. They present him in the movie as he was at one time an Olympic competitor in the shooting range. And was all that confirmed? This was a real guy, and he was an Olympic medalist?
There was a real guy, and that was reputed to be an Olympic shooter from the region. Now, the final scene, to be, you know, historically correct, is an amalgamation of several scope-on-scope battles that Chris had, which means you've got two different snipers going after each other, Chris versus a bad guy sniper. And
right.
There's no doubt that there were some guys such as that character of Mustafa in the region. You know, Jason Hall made an election to amalgamate and to personify those characters in that Mustafa character in the movie.
Okay.
To show it. But, you know, the amazing thing is that scope-on-scope battles, if you look at Chris's military record with his medal, in one engagement alone in Ramadi, he had,
right.
I believe it was five, possibly seven scope-on-scope, sniper-v-sniper battles that he took out the bad guys in. So it was a common thing for Chris to have sniper-on-sniper battles, such as depicted
in
the movie.
And did he eventually get Mustafa in the way that was depicted?
Well, he eventually got everybody that was against him in the deal, whether that was a, quote, the Mustafa or not. is a matter of historical, you know, imprecise. If, let's just say there's not a lot of data taken on those that are shot, so I can't say that historically. But it's certainly accurate in that there was a whole bunch of sniper battles.
Well, the reason I'm asking is because the description online of this scene says Chris takes him out with a risky long-distance shot at 2,100 yards, and that was the eighth longest sniper kill ever recorded. But then goes and says, well, that exposed his team to an unnecessary risk. But you're saying that that was a scene that was kind of a composite and that didn't happen that way.
I would have to say that that's accurate, yeah, the way you described it.
Okay.
I mean, the shot that he took at 2,100 yards was actually on a guy with a missile launcher that had an RPG that was about ready to attack some Army guys, and that was the image that he had at 2,100. Because if you realize how far 2,100 is, we're talking about almost a mile and a half.
Yes.
We're talking about a huge distance, so it's very difficult to discern who exactly you're shooting at, let alone what figure it is, other than the fact that they're pointing weapons at our troops, and you can get that in a 20-power scope. But beyond that, it's very difficult to identify the person by face.
We are talking on our newsmaker line with the author of a brand new novel about the sniper elite. This is called The Sniper and the Wolf. Scott McEwen is on our newsmaker line. Scott, if you have a couple more minutes, I need to take a short time out. Is that okay?
That'd be fine. I'd love to.
All right. Scott McEwen is here. Folks, I don't want to monopolize the conversation. Those of you who are big fans of Chris Kyle and of the movie and have technical questions or observations you'd like to make, the forum is yours at 284-1040 or 800-469-4295 in a moment.
How do you improve America's favorite subcompact tractor? Just ask the friendly folks at Capital City Equipment in Des Moines. They'll show you Kubota's all-new BX70 series, featuring user-friendly upgrades like a deluxe operator seat and optional quick-attach system for loaders and more. Kubota's compact, versatile BX series, the favorite of property owners nationwide for over 10 years. See the new BX70 now at Capital City Equipment. It'll become your favorite, too. Stop in and talk to Jake at Capital City Equipment, just north of the interstate on 2nd Avenue.
News Radio 1040, WHL.
Do not let your child or grandchild get left behind by whatever reason is behind their lack of ability to read and do some basic school-related exercise. You can wait for somebody else to step up and fix it, or you can. Get in touch with Judy Hintz at Educational Resource Associates. She has been the kid fixer for a generation now, and people come from all over the country to take advantage of her service. Once you see her at work, you will be impressed. Your child who is struggling will be impressed, and more than that, the repair work starts. Educational Resource Associates. By the way, for adults and children, I can toss in the autism and some of the other dyslexic words, too. She can deal with it. 225-8513, 225-8513.
Lee Klein here for Family Tree Care. They would like to help you plan your tree care program, and there's still time to have your conifers evaluated for treatment. And we're rolling into the storm season, so this is a good time to have your trees inspected, get rid of hazardous limbs. And we have the emerald ash borer here. It's time for a care plan for your ash trees. Treatment, rather than removal, is a viable option for saving your ash trees, especially if you have a specimen tree. They'll inspect your trees, give the recommendation, and the cost. This treatment has a 99% success rate. It's worth a phone call before you get out the chainsaw. Based on a preliminary evaluation, they guarantee their treatment will protect your tree from the emerald ash borer. Family Tree Care is a full-service tree care company with ISA-certified arborists offering expert professional service and personal attention. Call today, 278-5200. Free estimates. Family Tree Care, 278-5200.
News Radio 1040, WHL.
Steve Fracow is still breathing thanks to someone he never met. That someone gave him a life-size gift, his lungs. Steve is forever grateful that his donor registered as an Iowa organ donor. Any age is the right age to register. And at 54, Steve is a registered donor too. Don't wait to register when you renew your driver's license. Register now at iowadonornetwork.org and be ready to give a life-size gift today.
Do you want to learn how to earn commissions of up to 20% by laundering millions of foreign dollars?
Well, we can't help you with that. But among the many IT problems we solve, Barracuda's email security solutions keep email phishing attacks like this from entering your business network and any valuable data from leaking out. Reclaim your network like 150,000 other businesses have. To learn more about stopping email-borne threats, visit barracuda.com/email.
Do you have a retirement account? Is it likely to go up 60% or down 60%? Wake up. Low interest rates support the market, and it won't last forever. It's time to hedge with solid gold. You will regret not doing so in the next market crash. Do it right. Don't pay a setup and storage fee. Discover how. Call Goldworth. Request the IRA guide free. Call 800-257-GOLD. 800-257-GOLD. Visit Goldworth.com.
My guest on our newsmaker line is Scott McCune. He is a lawyer, trial lawyer, in San Diego, California. He's been a law professor at Thomas Jefferson School of Law. He has turned his skills loose in evaluating careers and evaluating life issues and turned his attention to Chris Kyle, wrote about it in The American Sniper. In his most recent endeavor is called The Sniper and the Wolf. I was looking at a story, Scott, it said Clint Eastwood calls The American Sniper, the movie, an anti-war movie. Do you agree with that assessment?
Well, it's certainly not pro-war. I mean, you know, and I think Clint's comment was, you know, people are trying to say that this is some, like, rah-rah pro-war type vision, and it was not by any means. It was an honest depiction of men and women and families that have to go through war. And it was never meant to be, nor was the book ever meant to be one of let's go get them, let's go do this or that, nor was it meant to be one that was in any way criticized those who were called upon and served right. This country. Instead, it was a view, a biopic from the viewpoint of a man who's had to go and fight wars for 10 years for this country, what it does to him, what it did to his family, and what this country, you know, really is kind of responsible for, I guess, to help the men and women that come back to this country and to reassimilate. That's what it was about.
I was having a conversation about this morning with one of my friends who has people in the military as well in his family. And we were thinking about one of the reasons why George the First, Herbert Walker Bush, decided not to follow through and to enter Baghdad after the American military liberated Kuwait from Saddam Hussein, was that they feared that the two reasons. First off, we don't have any authority to do it. And secondly, the more real reason is they would have had to have gone house to house, town to town, and clean out the place, just like the troops had to do in Ramadi and Fallujah that you demonstrated in The American Sniper. Do you think there's any justification for that logic?
I see no doubt that that was part of their viewpoint. And the other thing, too, is if you think about it, when you look at the more geopolitical region, is once you clean out, you know, a strong force such as a Saddam Hussein or whatever else, you know, and completely decimate, or I should say debilitate, that group that was running that aspect of it, then what are you left with? You're left with, you know, the Iranians who come in and try and take it from the east, and then you've got, you know, the groups such as what we see coming in from Syria and ISIL, and, you know, that terrorist group coming in from the north and the west. So you really kind of destabilize, you know, when you have a dispute between the Sunni and the Shia, such as what we see there, you destabilize an entire region. There's no way you can have anything but a vacuum created. And those who are students of history, as Bush was, having been through, you know, Bush one, having been through the, you know, World War II, realize that unless you have a Marshall Plan in place or something similar to that to deal with the instability, then you're left with exactly what we've got right now. when the troops pull out, you're going to have a situation, you know, that is chaos. And same, that's exactly what we got.
Same way in Afghanistan, right?
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's unfortunately, people have to realize that when you take out the bad guy that you take out, then you're left with whoever else is there to try and fight for power. And that's just a historical fact. I mean, you know, a lot of people have faulted the United States for what they did, for example, in Germany or in post-war Japan. And we still have bases there 50 years later. Now, is it in our geopolitical interest to do so? Yes. But was there also other reasons why we left troops in places like Germany immediately post-World War II and in Japan? Yes, there was. And it was to stabilize the region. And I like to think that this country is exceptional enough to let those countries where we're at, you know, flourish.
Right.
And if we look at post-war Germany and post-war Japan, they flourish.
Got only a couple of minutes left here. I noticed Seymour Hersh has taken a revisionist view of the killing of bin Laden. He says that's not the way it went down. And in the process of him writing that, the fellow that was part of the team, I think it was SEAL Team 6, that went into Pakistan to do that, stepped forward and says, I'm the guy that shot him. Now, there's two things. First off, you'd think there is reason for a revision of that story. And the second part is, in the past, we never would have heard about guys like Chris Kyle or the man who takes credit for shooting Osama bin Laden, because those kinds of behaviors were always below the radar, and never did the brass give anybody like that permission to go forward and talk about these things. Talk about both of those elements. Is it what's changed now that the brass has allowed these kinds of books, yours and others, and these guys to come forward to taking credit for the shooting of bin Laden?
Well, first of all, this book by Hersh, I tend to believe Rob, you know, and the guys that were there in disputing those claims, you know, vehemently. I don't think that the backup for these claims are substantial for this claim of Hersh and this group that's out there. You know, I mean, I know that the guys that were there on site, you know, such as the guys at Team 6 and
right.
that actually did the work.
Right.
That's a better witness. That's a better witness for me than these other guys.
Personally. Okay. All right.
And then second of all, you know, if a decision is made, and I've heard both sides of this argument, and certainly amongst the team, this argument is definitely flourishes. That you know, should we say anything or not?
Right.
Now, my point of view is, if it violates or compromises operational security, then you do not say it. And it's not because the government tells me not to do it or tells those that I work with not to do it. They
right.
just don't do it.
Right.
So, you know, we submitted American Sniper to the Department of Defense. I changed and made sure that every word that they asked be taken out, be changed. And it was very few things. And some of it I felt was somewhat, let's just say, petty. But that being said, if you want me to do it, fine. But we submitted and we did the exact restrictions that are imposed upon all members of the military. And I suggest to those that are going to write books in the future that they do the same thing. Because when you do that, you basically give the United States government the opportunity to make sure that they're okay with whatever you said, and you clear it up the way that it should be done. Now, a lot of guys have not done that in that fashion, such as we've seen, and I'm not going to mention any names, but I've always advised against it to do it otherwise. And, you know, and because as far at the end of the day, it's one team, one fight, and more than one team.
Yeah. And the other part of the other argument is, we would have, most of us, unless you're in the military, have been in similar circumstances, would have no way of fully appreciating the level of sacrifice and the level of service some of those men went through in order to do that awful task of cleaning out those towns. It was an amazing feat of military engineering.
Yeah, and that's it. You know, and I personally, to further your point, I personally would rather have my kid look up to a Chris Kyle figure or to a figure like I've created in The Sniper and the Wolf to be their heroes than somebody that's wearing a cod piece and a cape.
A couple quick, really last quick follow-up questions. How's Kayla doing, his wife?
Kaya is a very religious and a very strong person, and I believe, you know, I've not spoken to her as of late, but it seems to me that she's doing, you know, extremely well, you know, and you know, I hear good reports, so I'm very happy to hear that.
What about his brother?
think his brother's doing good. I actually saw Jeff appeared on a show with him recently, and Jeff is doing fine. You know, he's another strong individual, and you know, another great warrior. So he's doing good, and I think he's promoting the cause and promoting Chris's vision as well.
What do you think of what happened to Eddie Ray Routh? Is that how you pronounce that? He's spending the rest of his life in jail.
He's going to be in jail for the rest of his life. You know, but you know, from my perspective, that doesn't bring my friend back. You know, and you know, whatever happens to him is kind of like another person's decision. You know, the good Lord can forgive him. That's, you know, he killed my friend and, you know, and Chad, I felt the whole thing was just surreal. That I'll put it like that. But in any event, whatever justice is meted out to him, he deserves it.
Scott McKeown, thank you for your time. The Sniper and the Wolf, it's a brand new novel. It deals in the same territory with the same kind of skill. I figure this will be a movie too, you think, eventually?
It's already been picked up by Sony, the first two books, so I hope you're correct.
I won't be surprised. Scott McKeown, thank you for your time this morning, sir.
Thank you for having me out. I really appreciate it.
You bet. Bye-bye. Right after our farm markets, we're scheduled to talk with Congressman Steve King.
Good luck from News Radio 1040 WHO.
This weekend is kind of an interesting deal politically here in Iowa. A number of people have decided to pool their resources and to talk about national security issues here in Des Moines, Iowa. And this is going to be at a Point of Grace Church. They have borrowed that facility. And they've invited several presidential candidates. Trump, Santorum, Jindal, and Carson are on the schedule so far, maybe more added later. And our own Congressman Steve King will be one of the first speakers. Steve, welcome aboard, sir.
Well, good morning, and thanks a lot, Jan. I'm looking forward to Saturday, too.
I think it's very important that Iowans are in the mix when we're talking about this issue, because even though we're the flyover zone, we're not the left-out zone. You may have seen the story this morning of Iowans in Cedar Rapids, charges filed against four Iowans for trying to traffic guns out of the country to, I'm not sure, terrorist organizations, but Syrian refugees. That's kind of a scary proposition, I'm thinking.
It is a scary proposition, and when you look at it, I had him just print the map for me. I wanted to identify it geographically in Cedar Rapids. How close is this location where they were packaging and gathering up these guns to the mother mosque, to one of the original mosques in the country? And how is this all tied together? Well, it is tied together through Islam. And when you see this happen in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, you have to believe that the rest of the country, much of it, has a network that's similar that has just not been uncovered yet, Jan.
And it wasn't
very it's sobering.
And it wasn't the NSA. It wasn't snooping. It wasn't drones. It's none of the things that we are scared of that actually caught these guys. It was an alert and honest gun dealer who notified the authorities, and without his efforts, I think these guys would have been successful. We never would have known about it.
And then they may likely have been successful in the past. I'm convinced of that, too. It was a federal firearms dealer, a license that saw an irregularity in the pattern of purchases that didn't happen to fit the normal traffic that was there, and then alerted the officials that it was closer to the NRA than it was the NSA this time, Jan. And I'm really grateful to the dealer. I don't know who he is, but hopefully he gets the message that we really appreciate him.
Absolutely. Well, all right, so you have all these, I would say, front organizations. They'll put up a business, and then the nefarious activities can begin. I've been told off the record by people who follow this, there are several pockets that authorities are watching here in Iowa, and not just Islamic ones. There are other, I will use the word cults, that are active here and that are being observed as well.
Well, and I'm not picking up very much on that from the communications that come to me, Jen. I'm not sure this administration would brief me on the things that they're watching, but I am, of course, getting more and more finely tuned to the radical Islam component of this. And we have to say in most conversations the truth that there are good moderate Muslims out there. We need them to speak up. I had been the host for member of the Dutch Parliament, Mr. Geert Wilders, for four events that we organized week before last.
Yeah, you were getting hammered for that. You were getting hammered for bringing that guy in. Well, you're just a Steve. You're a provocateur, and you're bringing this provocative guy in. You're part of the problem, Congressman King.
Well, maybe so, Dan. I was at the Capitol Hill police just last night on the Capitol steps as I stepped down from last vote. I thanked them for ramping up their security to protect him and us while we were doing a press conference here at the Capitol. They had helicopter coverage for us, and they ramped up their protection. If you had told me that on a week ago Sunday night that there would be an ISIS-inspired attack in America that night, I could have told you it would be Garland, Texas. And I did get a call from there 20 minutes after the shooting began, and was briefed on what at least they knew at the time, and picked up on the excitement of it all. But they are communicating through the internet globally. And you can't measure how much of ISIS and radical Islam of every label on there is that that's directed versus that which is inspired. But this was, I believe, was almost certainly inspired by ISIS, and we have a lot to do to defeat them. It's going to take a while.
It's ironic while you're doing that and being concerned and participating in a national security action summit, wondering what to do, the fellow whose job it is to monitor this, the head of Homeland Security, Jeh Johnson, has his own agenda. You've probably heard this, but it merits another dose.
For my part, I've been in listening mode for these conversations. I've also said that we in the administration and the government should give voice to the plight of Muslims living in this country and the discrimination that they face. And so I personally committed to speak out about the situation that very often people in the Muslim community in this country face, the fact that there are 1.6 billion Muslims in the world and that the Islamic faith is one about peace and brotherhood.
So the guy that we put in charge of Homeland Security thinks it's his job as chief of the Homeland Security to give voice to Muslims while calling Islam the religion of peace.
This is just appalling to think that the man who's in charge of protecting the Americans domestically would take a position like that, Jan. Here's some things that we should just be able to speak out openly and say. For example, Not all Taliban are Muslims, not all Muslims are Taliban, but all Taliban are Muslims. Not all Taliban are terrorists, but all Al Qaeda, I think, are terrorists. Well, when you look at the components of all of this, I just think that the most important thing of this is that we should understand that there are peaceful people of all stripes out there, whatever they might be, peaceful Muslims, peaceful Jews, peaceful Christians. The president can dredge up his crusader history and try to leverage that back against us to guilt us. But what's this discrimination that's going on against Muslims in this country? I'm not seeing it. I mean, they are beheading Christians on the shores of the Mediterranean Sea, and some people are speaking ill of that component. And so where are the moderate Muslims speaking up? We find one, two, three here and there, but most of them are afraid. Most of them are good people, but they're afraid. And why are they afraid? Because they know that attacks like happened in Garland, Texas are going to continue. They understand the evil elements in their midst. And I would like to see them stand up and at least support President al-Sisi of Egypt, who is going to be leading this global charge for the Muslim religion to transform itself so that it rejects the radical elements within. If that happens, that will save millions of lives eventually and could avoid a really heavy and costly war.
One of the other speakers on Saturday morning will be from Refugee Resettlement Watch, Ann Corcoran. She is an amazing resource, and she just talks about this. This is an Islamic jihad to bring all kinds of refugees to the United States. We're about to receive, according to the Obama administration, more than 100,000 plus of Syrian refugees. And just north of the Iowa border in Minnesota, I've talked about this several times, you've got about 30,000 Somali refugees, most of them Muslims, and about 1,000 of them run the Minneapolis airport. I mean, it's just absurd what this is. And the airport people do this because it's cheap labor, but they put the rest of us at risk while they're doing it. Is there something you guys can do to take the United Nations out of our resettlement program mix?
Well, there should be, Jan, and one of the problems, it's a huge problem we have in our constitutional government, is that the president has claimed so much of Congress's authority, and Congress has been so apathetic about defending its authority. It's maybe not impossible, but it's very, very difficult to be able to bring about those kind of changes. And it's this president's driving this agenda. He has come down on the side of the Muslim Brotherhood, time after time after time. He sides with the Muslim Brotherhood in Libya, with the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. The Arab Spring, that's what, 4 years old now, broke against us in every manifestation of it except the most recent in Egypt. And the president has been on the wrong side of every one of those changes that have taken place. And we've got, what, 20 months to go before we get our country back. And this morning I hosted a breakfast, as I do every Wednesday morning. I chair the Conservative Opportunities Society. My guest was Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, who he's commanded the 82nd Airborne. He's served in Iraq, Afghanistan, Southern Command, south of us in the Western Hemisphere, and he's been the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency. This man has a brain full of the things that needs to be in the head of the next president of the United States, and we wish we were in the head of this president, but none of us around that table have a hope that anything is going to change. We just want to do the best we can to get through. We have a president that sees this picture. It's so important that Iowans come to this meeting on Saturday, and they see the components of our national security, from immigration to the power grid, to our military decline, to facing the jihad movement. Jan, I'm glad you're going
to
be there.
I will. Hey, thank you so much for joining us this morning, and I'll look forward to what you have to say, Congressman Steve King. Thank you indeed.
Thank you, Jan.
You bet. A brief timeout, back in a moment on News Radio 1040 WHO.
Views expressed are those of hosts, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of News Radio 1040 WHO.
People have been emailing me and texting me. He says, Michael, you talk about that National Security Action Summit on Saturday. You tell us where it is, but you don't tell us any more information. Well, it begins at 8 o'clock in the morning and goes until the middle of the afternoon. And to get tickets or ticket information, you just get up on the web, the Family Leader website, and chase the links to their sign-up. Okay, that's the best way to do it, and to avoid the crush at the door. That will save you some time and effort. All right, it should be an interesting morning. Those of you who are issue junkies and political junkies, this will give you another chance to see and meet and greet and ask questions. That's the neat part of this. You'll have Ben Carson speaking, and then he'll open it up for questions for a couple of minutes. Same way with Bobby Jindal, same way with Frank Gaffney, and Donald Trump even answering questions. All right, that's kind of cool. All right, and I think it's video. I think Ted Cruz is not going to be speaking there in person, but he's going to be online a video. And Santorum will be there doing a Q&A as well. So the Family Leader, chase the links, and you should be able to find it that way. We're on the newsmaker line waiting for Dana Perino to call us. If we make connections, we'll be chatting with her in just a moment. I was reading her book right a little bit last night. Let me just read you a passage. As the president was about to turn over his command to President-elect Obama, the SEALs were giving President Bush a much gratitude, as much encouragement as he was trying to give back to them. I faded into the background, but two SEALs came over to me and said, "Pardon us, ma'am, but are you the press secretary?" I was honored that they even recognized me, and I stuck out my hand to introduce myself, and they thanked them, and I thanked them for serving, and they asked if they could get their picture taken with me. And as one of the guys got his camera phone ready, I tried making some small talk. I asked the first guy, "So, what was it that made you want to become a Navy SEAL? A chance for adventure? Family tradition? Physical challenge? Desire to see the world?" "Oh, no, ma'am. Chicks. Dig it." "Even with the beard?" "Oh, yeah. They get it." He was confident of that, and I believed him. Then I asked the second SEAL, "When you get ready to go wherever it is you're going to go, do you have to take a lot of language courses?" "Oh, no, ma'am. We're not really there to talk." Dana, that's just funny. That's really, really funny. Thank you for joining us this morning, Dana.
Thank you so much. I'm glad you liked that part. I love it too.
Well, you sort of got pushed into the deep part of the pool really fast, didn't you?
When I was the press secretary, yes, and the deputy press secretary, I served under two different press secretaries. I was there for a total of 7.5 years, and so I had some good training along the way. The last press secretary I worked for under, who had me as his deputy, was Tony Snow. A wonderful man who, unfortunately, I'm sure you probably remember him.
Yes, I interviewed him several times.
For your listeners who don't remember, he was a wonderful press secretary. Unfortunately, he lost his battle with colon cancer in July of 2008, about a year after he left the White House. So,
yes,
I was thrown a little bit into the deep end, but I loved my job as press secretary. I really did.
Right. Well, you write about yourself. You grew up there in the West in Colorado -Wyoming. So I first galloped on a horse in a cattle drive, watched my family brand their cows, make hay bales, farm a field of oats, had a special life experience that most people in America could never imagine. We felt sorry for city dwellers, poor fellas. I really relate to that. You're a farm kid, eh?
I was. Mostly cattle, some quarter horses, and a little bit of farming also. And I loved it. I loved that upbringing. One of the reasons I really wanted to write this book is I've had this amazing career so far, and young people and their parents will often ask me for advice for them. And I find that they kind of want the roadmap. It's like, you know, young people have grown up pressing a button and then something happens.
Right.
They want the GPS for their careers. But also I found that people from where I grew up, as in not in Washington and not in New York or Los Angeles.
Right.
We can tend to have lowered expectations for our careers. And I really wanted everybody to hear my story, because you don't have to have gone to an elite school or an Ivy League university in order to end up advising the President of the United States in the Oval Office. And I made history as the first Republican woman to serve as press secretary at the age of 35. And I got a chance to serve during wars and, well, the financial crisis, certainly.
Right.
The big tax cuts debate, the big intelligence issues. All of those things I got to experience because I trusted enough that God had a better plan for me than I always tried to make for myself.
Why is faith part of your persona?
Well, thankfully, I had parents and grandparents who instilled that in me early on. We were Lutheran churchgoers. Greg Gutfeld on The Five, the show I do at Fox, he thinks it's so funny that I was in the handbell choir.
What was your key?
I don't remember. I could play a lot. I could hold like multiple bells all at once. And I could even, you know, I could do the two at once, and I loved it. And I was part of the Sunday school group. And actually, later on, when I was in working in Washington, D.C., I joined a group, a church called the Lutheran Church of the Reformation. It was right behind the Supreme Court. Still is. And I used to go there, and we had a singles group.
Right.
We got together every Wednesday night. And I remember during what I write about this thing I call the quarter-life crisis. I think for women, it's sometimes harder to turn 25 than it is to turn 40. And I was expressing my concerns to this woman in our group who was slightly older than me, and she reminded me of a Bible verse. You know, she said that God doesn't want you to live fearfully.
Right.
Remember, God says to fear not. And she suggested that if I had that much anxiety, which at the time I really did, and I write very openly about it in the book, she said, write that down on a piece of paper, fear not, and carry that with you. And if you get too anxious, just pull it out of your pocket or your wallet and just remind yourself. And it really did help me get through. And repeatedly through life, I've needed to return to my faith for strength. And also, I just live with a life full of gratitude. Right? Just full of gratitude for all the things I've been blessed to be able to see and do. And for the fact that I met my husband on an airplane. And that's chapter two. It's called Love at First Flight.
Right. Were you in the cargo section, or were you in the first class? Where were you?
Oh, no, not first class. No way. We were assigned seats next to each other on an American Airlines flight going from Denver to Chicago.
Love at first sight, eh?
Yeah.
Why?
It was great.
Why? What was the chemistry? Just for future reference, I might try it. You know, just what works?
Well, you know, you can't ever really explain it, right? Love is
love. Well, I'll
tell you that I heard him when we got on the plane. We were the last two to get on the plane, and we happened to be the two assigned seats next to each other.
Right.
And when I sat down, he asked me if he could put my bag up above, and I said no, because if you've watched the show, you know I'm so short, my feet don't touch the ground, so I need my bag to rest my feet on. But I heard his British accent. Okay, so that will make any single American woman look up. And I did a quick scan. I thought, oh, handsome.
Yeah.
And no wedding ring.
Right.
So when he sat down and he had his book, The Tailor of Panama, I asked him about the book, and we talked nonstop for 2 hours.
All right.
He's British, and he's older than me.
Okay.
And there's 100 reasons we shouldn't have been together.
Okay.
But I took the chance and moved to England to be with him.
How long did you spend there?
Well, sir, that's an interesting story. Only 10 months, because as you might read in that chapter too, socialism and rain didn't really suit me very well.
So you started getting snarky real fast, eh?
I wanted to come back to America. Yeah. And so did he.
All right,
he became a citizen, and he loves it here.
Well, all right, so why did you not advise the Lutheran Church of the Reformation that their title was needlessly redundant?
I know. We used to say Lutheran squared.
Hey, were you the one that fed Beckel the shrimp?
No, I didn't feed it to him, but I watched him nearly choke to death on the first day our show was being celebrated as a permanent addition to the Fox lineup.
Right.
I was there when Roger Ailes, the head of Fox News and the creator of all these great shows, tried to save his life, but his arms weren't long enough to reach around Beckel because he's kind of a big guy. So Eric Bowling, the co-host on the show, leapt over the table, literally, leapt over the table, and just as Bob's face was turning purple, got the shrimp up and saved Bob's life.
Well, see, the folks, and that was not just, that's not stagecraft, it really happened, right?
Oh, no, it really happened. And I thought that Bob was teasing me because the week before we'd been on air together,
right?
And he had pretended to have a heart attack, and I thought he was serious. So I thought that he was just playing around, so I didn't pay it that much attention until there was a moment. I remember that moment. You probably had these in your life too, where you think, "Oh wait, they're not joking. He's really in trouble."
Yeah, it's really bad stuff is really happening now. This does explain, though, why Beckel does not kill Bowling.
Exactly. They have a common bond.
Yes. About the time where Beckel achieves more irate and more irritation than he can normally withstand, he remembers Bowling rescued him.
Yeah, they have a nice affection to one another, that's for sure.
Well, that's a pleasant way. Well, you're the one that lives with these guys. I mean, you see this. That was an interesting mix. Who decided the five, and why did they think it would work?
Well, I do think that was Roger Ailes, who had for a long time wanted to do an ensemble cast of a show, and he wanted to bring people together that could act like a family at dinner time.
Right.
Which we do.
Food fights.
Including all the fights and the hilarity. You know, our commercial breaks are sometimes the best part of the show, because that's when all the good stuff happens. Juan and I really got into it in the commercial break yesterday.
Good.
But of
it's
course,
about time.
I convinced him that I was right in the end.
It wrestled
or at least he just told me I was, so I leave him alone.
Speaking of commercial breaks, Dana, I need to take a short one here and we'll
Great.
Come back. And folks, I don't want to monopolize the conversation. Those of you who are fans of The Five and Dana Perino, and you followed her career as the White House press secretary under Bush, maybe you have a question of your own. You can reach us at 284-1040 or 800-469-4295 in a moment.
Get your soybean crop off to a strong start this season.
WHO.
Dana Perino's former White House press secretary and one of the co-hosts on an extremely successful Fox program called The Five. And her book is called And the Good News Is. Dana, we have some folks who have quick questions, and let's begin with Marcia. Good morning, Marcia.
Good morning. Hi, Dana.
Hi.
I'm a longtime admirer. I love you on The Five. I've read your book. I loved it. But I just wondered if you're coming in any time soon to Des Moines or any area in the Midwest where we could come to your book tour.
Oh, thanks for asking. And I will, you know, right now we just got through the big major part. I got to go to Dallas to see President Bush. And, of course, I had to go to Washington, D.C. And I went home to Denver. And after this trip to Florida, we're taking a look around. I know I have to go to Las Vegas because my cousin, who was in that special that ran on Fox the other night, he's going to get married to his sweetheart. They're going to go from Newcastle, Wyoming, down there to Vegas for a weekend. So if I could fit Des Moines in there, I sure would like to. I'm sure I would run into about 10 presidential candidates while I was there.
Good reason to come.
And we have a slogan here, Dana. What happens in Des Moines stays in Des Moines.
Thank you, Dana.
Thank you very
much. Thanks, Marcia.
You bet. Bye-bye. You advocate in your book having your sarcasm gland removed.
Mm-hmm.
Is that painful surgery or is it?
I just say, you know, in professional setting, one of the things I used to imagine when I was press secretary was if President Bush were watching me right now, would he be proud of what I was saying? And sometimes the easiest thing to be is snarky and sarcastic.
Yes.
And you know, there are press secretaries who use that all the time, and I find it totally unattractive, unpersuasive, and unhelpful to the president and to the people of the United States. But I also think that advice translates to people even in their corporate setting or in their nonprofit world. The sarcasm kind of tastes good for half a second, and then the aftertaste is bad.
It's a hard lesson, though, isn't it?
Oh, certainly. It's a hard one, but you know, one of the things Dick Cheney used to say that I love is that you never get in trouble for something you didn't say.
Or the other thing is, I've been watching you guys for a long time. If you never want to be soundbited, talk very, very slow.
You know, another trick I learned from Karen Hughes, the White House communications counselor for President Bush.
Yes.
If you don't want to be quoted in the paper, you just have to keep repeating the person's name in the question or in your answer. So say it was Sheryl Sandberg, Stolberg of the New York Times. I would say, well, Sheryl, that's an interesting question, Sheryl, and I understand why you asked it, Sheryl. You just keep saying that and people never appreciate it.
Dana, we call that Iowa passive aggressive. It was a pleasure talking with you, Dana Farina. Look for And the Good News Is. Thank you, Dana.
All right, bye-bye.
Big Show starts in a moment, and listen for it. We've got all kinds of neat stuff coming up, and even though Bob Quinn is here. Sorry. Cleaning my mouth and went off.